Will there be a winter wolf hunt now that the gray wolf is no longer protected by the Endangered Species Act? That's the question we're exploring here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new lawsuit against the State Department of Natural Resources says the DNR had months to prepare for the delisting and has refused to permit the hunting and trapping of wolves so far this year. Are you a hunter or a farmer? Do you think lethal control should be allowed for gray wolves? How do you feel about the wolf population growing? 800-642-1234 to join in. Danielle Kading is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Superior. Danny, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks. Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about this lawsuit that was filed this week by a conservative advocacy group over wolf hunting.
Yeah, the lawsuit was filed by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty on behalf of Kansas-based Hunter Nation. And basically, the lawsuit is seeking to force the DNR to immediately resume the wolf hunt in compliance with state law, because under Wisconsin statutes, the DNR is required to hold a single wolf hunting and trapping season from the middle of October through February when the animal isn't listed as an endangered species. And it was delisted officially on January 4th after the Trump administration announced in October that they were going to remove federal protections for the animal.
So when do the plaintiffs say that the DNR should hold a wolf hunt?
Yeah, they want the wolf hunt to resume immediately. They're looking for an order from the court to begin, you know, they're looking for a swift decision so that they can start this immediately, because there's concern among hunting groups and lawmakers that the Biden administration could possibly reverse this delisting decision under the Trump administration. You know, President Joe Biden has ordered a broad review of agency actions, including the wolf's delisting, to examine whether or not they comply with one of his recent executive orders that seeks to undo a lot of the environmental rollbacks that we saw under President Trump.
What does the DNR say in all of this as to why it can't hold a wolf hunt right away?
Yeah, well, the DNR, they issued a statement saying that they're reviewing the complaint and that they're not commenting further at this time. But in the past, they have said that, you know, implementing a wolf season in Wisconsin takes time, and that they need to develop a science-based harvest quota, and that they need to get public input and also consult with tribes as part of a federal court ruling in which they're required to consult and coordinate management of natural resources with them, including the wolf population.
Yeah, how do tribal governments view this issue? Because there also was the Voight decision from 1983.
Right. That's the ruling that I was talking about. So multiple Wisconsin tribes spoke at a recent Natural Resources Board meeting where lawmakers had asked the board to direct the DNR to immediately resume this wolf hunt. But at that meeting, you know, there was a lot of concern whether or not the state was going to meet its obligation to tribes under that decision that you referenced, because that ruling affirms tribal rights to hunt, fish, and gather in ceded territory under treaties with the federal government. And they're required to coordinate with them, with tribes on natural resource management.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Wisconsin's gray wolves, and you can join in. Should they be hunted? Should they be on the endangered species list? 800-642-1234. We have WPR reporter Danielle Kading as our guide to this news. Let's bring in Norm joining us from Oneida County this morning. Hi, Norm.
Good morning. One thing I don't hear about is another category called the threatened species list. If the wolves are on the threatened species list, wildlife authorities have the power to take out problem wolves, but there would not be a public hunting season on wolves. I think this thing is in effect in Minnesota. I am totally against a public hunting season on wolves. We slaughtered them to extinction once. Leave them alone. They have a rightful, necessary place in our environment.
Norm, thank you. Danny, what is the momentum like for people who are advocating to keep them on the endangered species list?
Well, right now there is a lawsuit that's been filed by environmental and wildlife groups to reverse the decision by the Trump administration and restore federal protections for the animal. And what Norm was talking about, you know, listing it as a threatened species, that has been discussed before. And I think that animal rights groups have said that they've been open to that possibility in the past, because they, mostly the issue revolves around Wisconsin's wolf hunt and having to be required to hold this hunt when the species is not listed. You know, they're, the environmental and animal rights groups are afraid that if the wolf hunt were to resume, that the population would be decimated. When we saw the wolf hunt take place for several years from 2012 to 2014, before it was relisted, we saw 528 wolves that were killed during that time. But since then, we've seen wolves grow to more than 1,000 in their numbers across Wisconsin.
So their numbers have rebounded. Let's bring in another call now. Linda is with us from Pewaukee. Hi, Linda. What would you like to add?
Hi, real quickly, I just like to say I listened to the whole 5-hour meeting and I followed up on it by asking the DNR liaison for a copy of all of the public comments, keeping in mind that people had 2 days to get their comments in. And the PDF is like some 600 pages, and overwhelmingly people from all over the state, and this includes even some hunters and farmers, are saying that they do not want this. There's a handful of people that want it, and that's what this is about. And they are supposed to be representing the people of the state, and that's what they need to do. So that's all I have to say on that.
Yeah, Linda, it sounds like you are deeply invested in this issue. How do you feel about it?
Well, I feel like, I don't know about anybody else, but I mean, I don't have like a pack of wolves at the door trying to, you know, kill myself and my family. And I think that the only way that you could justify something this ridiculous is if, you know, our very lives were in danger, which of course they're not. And so I just, it's ridiculous, and it's some kind of power play, and, you know, that's about all that really can be said. And plus, there is no decimation of the deer herd. That is a myth.
Okay, and I want Danny to be able to respond here. What was revealed through the public comment period?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's true what she's saying, that there was very little time ahead of the special meeting that was held before the Natural Resources Board. I think the argument that lawmakers and hunting groups and some wildlife groups are making is that the DNR had more than a year to hold its wolf management committee to get together and review its wolf management plan, and that they refused to do that. So while some people think that, you know, they were given a limited opportunity for public comment, some wildlife and hunting groups say the DNR has been dragging its feet on this issue, and that they could have been consulting with tribes and could have been reviewing this plan when the Trump administration announced the delisting. Now, I think, you know, there might be some agency staff that would say, why would we plan to do something if it was uncertain? So, you know, there's a lot of strong feelings about this. And there seems to be an urban and rural divide too with this. The wolf, you know, the extent of their range where they are mostly is in northern and central Wisconsin. So we hear a lot from people who are living in the north and in the center of the state who are experiencing these conflicts with wolves where they're killing their cattle or they're killing their pets. And that is a frustration and a threat to their livelihood. Whereas we might hear from people in Milwaukee or Madison that, you know, this is an animal that needs to be protected. And I think the both viewpoints are valid, and also that tribes have a valid viewpoint in this as well. And, you know, the wolf or Mayangan, they view as a relative. It's important to their clan systems or their forms of government. And there's just a lot of strong emotions around management of the wolf.
We're talking with WPR reporter Danielle Kading about the future of Wisconsin's gray wolves. When do you think it makes sense to put an animal on the endangered species list or to remove them? Have you encountered a gray wolf while hunting or camping? What did you do? Have you lost livestock because of wolves in Wisconsin? How do you feel about this issue? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Danny Kading in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the future of the gray wolf population in Wisconsin and whether there would be a winter wolf hunt now that the gray wolf is no longer protected by the Endangered Species Act. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We've been exploring this new lawsuit against the State Department of Natural Resources, saying that the DNR had months to prepare for a wolf hunt with the delisting that occurred. You can join in with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Danny Kading is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter in Superior, and she stays with us. Let's bring in Chris now in Port Wing. Hi, Chris. What would you like to add?
Hi. Well, first, good show, and thank Ms. Kading for such good reporting. She's doing a great job up here. I wanted to point out that as far as wolf predation of species, they've always, you know, in the state, we've always had a compensation program so that when farmers or householders lose animals, they get compensated. So it's not a left in the cold sort of situation. We don't have anybody being attacked like some places in, you know, very far northern Canada where the wolves have mixed with coyotes. And the main thing is we should pay attention to the science, because scientifically you don't look at just the number of wolves. You look at the number of mated pairs of wolves if you're going to establish and maintain a predator, which is good for our environment. Now, we don't have enough mated pairs in the state to maintain a healthy population of wolves. And we should count that and talk about that number rather than just the number of wolves. And I thank you very much for having the show. Keep up the good work.
Chris, thank you for calling in. Danny, what about looking more holistically and not just at a single number population? Has that been looked at?
Yeah, you know, I would say, you know, to Chris's comments about having this based on science, you know, that's been a point that environmental groups have pointed to and animal rights groups have pointed to during this discussion, is that we need to have the best available science available when we're making these decisions about how we're going to manage wolves. And they're basically arguing that that's not happening right now with it. The delisting that was made by the Trump administration, that it ignored the best available science that we have about wolves, and that basically the recovery plan that the feds had in place was really outdated, hadn't been updated in decades, and also that some of the information that the state is working off of is quite old as well, because its wolf management plan was first created in 1999 and last updated in 2007. And so they want to see the most recent best available science in making these decisions. And I think we're somewhere around 256 packs in northern and central Wisconsin. So that's quite an increase from what we saw 3 decades ago when there were just 5 packs in the state.
Danny, has there been discussion around the compensation program for losing livestock?
Yes, there has been debate about that. You know, some people support that program and think it's necessary to compensate farmers and pet owners for their losses. You know, some farmers, though, have said that they would rather see that money go into control and management of the wolf because it's taxpayer dollars. I think in the last 3 decades or so, we've seen more than $2.7 million paid out by the state to hunters and livestock owners. That's not an insignificant amount of money. And I think it's somewhere around $2,500 per animal that is lost that the state will compensate. So there's been discussion about that, but I haven't heard of any recent pushes to change that system.
We have WPR reporter Danny Kading, our guide to wolves, the Wisconsin gray wolf population, and what the future holds, along with the litigation now around it. You can join in 800-642-1234. Kevin is joining us from Algoma this morning. Hi, Kevin. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning. First of all, I want to say that I am a hunter, but I have hunted Canada for deer and bear back in the 90s and Minnesota by Ely. And those were the places that I've heard my first wolf howl. And I will say I was thrilled. You know, it was a little scary, but it was awesome to hear, you know, the hair stood up on my arms, my neck, everything. It was really cool to know that there was another predator out there with me. That being said, I have a lot of friends in northern Wisconsin who have really seen their deer hunting take a beating. And there is a lot of value to deer hunting to the Wisconsin economy. Our management plan is for about 350 wolves, and we've been three times that or more for a long time. And just to add one more thing, as far as the hunt, back in 2012 to 2014, there were more than 500 wolves killed by hunters and trappers, mostly trappers. And that doesn't even include the federal trapping that took place, nor does it take into account the illegal killings, the vehicle kills, all the other way wolves die. And that DNR overwinter estimate dropped only 76 animals in 3 years. So you can't just think that every wolf you shoot, there's one less wolf now. And, you know, we're not even keeping up with the annual pup recruitment. There is.
Okay, Kevin, I want Danny to be able to jump in here and respond. You know, and Kevin also makes the point that deer hunting has been compromised with the population of gray wolves. Has that come up?
Well, the Wisconsin DNR has said that generally, you know, weather and vehicle accidents have had more of an impact on the deer population than wolves. You know, wolves will prey on sick deer. So, you know, that does happen. But generally speaking, wolves are not the primary factor that's impacting the deer population.
Okay. Let's bring in John now in Rhinelander. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a big fan of wolves. And because of the pressure they're getting from Canada and Alaska, they're moving into our beautiful state. They can bite down 10,000 pounds per square inch. That means they can eat bones. They can clean up all the sick and the down and dead deer. But I think that we should try to all get along.
John, thank you. Has there been a migration and influx of wolves moving from other places into Wisconsin, Danny?
Well, that's basically how Wisconsin's wolf population began to recover. Is back in the 80s, the wolf population from Minnesota started coming over through Douglas County in northern Wisconsin, and we began to see wolf numbers grow very slowly at first in the 80s and the early 90s. And then, you know, it started to increase and kind of stabilize around 1990, around 2000. And so since then, we've seen a steady increase in the wolf population.
So the environmental and wildlife groups that are suing to overturn the Trump administration's decision, what is the status of that lawsuit?
Of the lawsuit to overturn it? Well, yeah. It was just filed in early January.
Okay.
And they didn't ask for an injunction, which would mean that there would be a stay on any wolf hunting, or, you know, that basically that means that we can currently hunt or kill, well, we can't hunt, but we can currently kill problem wolves in Wisconsin. That is an option that is available to farmers or pet owners if there is a wolf that is actively killing a dog or actively killing an animal. They can intervene in that situation, but it has to be reported to the state. It remains to be seen what's going to happen with that lawsuit and also with the Biden administration and what they're going to come out and say. But, one thing I would point out is back in 2011, the wolf was delisted in the Western Great Lakes region under the Obama administration. So I don't think it's like a for sure thing that we could see protections restored for the gray wolf.
And as we start to wrap up here, Danny, if a wolf hunting season happens, what might the regulations look like for hunters?
Well, if the wolf hunting season occurs, you know, right now there's going to be conversations among the DNR. They're going to start holding meetings and public hearings to talk about the wolf management plan and take comment on that, and also to come up with a quota. And so that would all begin if we do have a hunt in November.
Danny, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Kate.
Danielle Kading is a WPR reporter based in Superior. We've been talking about Wisconsin's gray wolves being removed from the endangered species list and the calls for hunting to begin again. Coming up, we learn how the Wisconsin National Guard is dispatching mobile vaccination clinics for health departments that request it. What questions do you have about these clinics? Would you welcome one in your county? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the role of the Wisconsin National Guard in battling COVID-19. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So by the numbers, according to the Guard's Public Affairs Office, roughly 600 citizen soldiers and airmen are serving in a capacity involving our state's ongoing response to COVID. And for about 2 weeks now, troops have helped stand up vaccination clinics at the request of local county health departments. Have you encountered the Guard as you get tested or vaccinated? What do you want to convey? Are you in the Guard and working on this mission? How do you describe your role? Join in 800-642-1234. Wisconsin National Guard Captain David Eichen is a team officer for the mobile coronavirus vaccination clinics. He's a physician's assistant in Sheboygan. Captain Eichen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me on, Kate.
Well, take us first into your mobile clinic setup. What are you rolling out for communities?
Now, what we're rolling up for communities is a partnership with local health departments and UW vaccinators to find the gaps in the communities that need mobile vaccination access and providing it. Specifically, the Guard is coming in with 5-person teams that are able to help the local health departments scale up their operations.
So what are the jobs of these 5-person teams?
So they basically fill in universal roles inside the mobile vaccination clinics, specifically greeters and triage, you know, inviting the public into the mobile vaccination clinic, making sure that they're healthy, registering them, providing them some education documents if need be, and then observing the citizens after they've been vaccinated for any adverse reactions and providing data entry.
So you mentioned you're filling in where there are gaps. What is demand like? Are there gaps for local health departments in delivering these shots into arms?
I think that there are, just based on the scale of what's necessary for us to vaccinate all of the citizens in Wisconsin. Specifically, our goal is to get out there and provide help for the local health departments as we're asked for it through a request for assistance process. And then ultimately we arrive and help their operations. The demand right now has been kind of limited because we're only in the infancy of this project and program, but we can see that demand is going to rise.
Are you ready to scale it up?
Yeah, currently we're training more individuals to serve in the mobile vaccination team role. So we will be able to scale up and help out as need be.
And where in the state have the mobile clinics been dispatched so far?
again, we're early on in this, but so far we've had sites in Sauk County, Winnebago County, Rock County, Milwaukee County, and Kenosha County.
And what have you heard? How is it going when you're on site?
I think it's been really good. It's been really well received, both by the citizens that are getting vaccinated and by the public health staff. I think our role there has been appreciated, and we're looking for just more opportunities for us to continue this.
How many vaccines are you able to deliver each day through these mobile clinics? Do you have some averages?
On average, it depends on a number of variables. For the most part, it's dictated by what the request for assistance is, because the sites are going to actually use their allocation of vaccines. We have been able to reach as high as 1,222 at a site. I've been seeing more and more sites requesting roughly 1,000 a day, which I think is reasonable.
Do you have any advice for local public health departments that are trying to quickly stand up these clinics? How do you make them run smoothly?
Oh, I think a lot of it has to do with the pre-coordination, just setting up a really good, clear, concise plan, and then being ready to adapt that as the customers are coming in. This is a pretty universal concept. So when the guard portion of the mobile vaccination team arrives on site, we can kind of adapt and adopt whatever public health needs. So really the pre-coordination is the biggest piece for this to run smooth.
We're talking with Wisconsin National Guard Captain David Eichen, who is a team officer for the state's mobile vaccination clinics. He's also a physician's assistant. Taking your questions, has your community put together a mobile vaccination clinic? How is it going? What questions do you have about standing up these sites? 800-642-1234 to join in. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. So what happens if people, your customers, don't show up for their scheduled vaccinations?
So what generally happens, the public health is going to determine what they end up doing with the vaccines ultimately and who receives them. If there are some no-shows or if there's an issue with people getting to the site, the public health has been really good stewards about being very precise in the use of the vaccines. And there's a possibility that if they are not able to get all of the vaccine into or find customers for the vaccines, what we can do is we can end up storing the vaccine again as long as we've kept it within the ideal temperature range, which they do a really good job of doing.
Have you seen steps taken to make sure vaccines are not wasted?
Oh, definitely. Like I said, public health is very conscious about the optics revolving around vaccine use. So they've been very very good at making sure that they're completing the vaccinations and not putting any of the vaccine to waste.
You were part of the Guard's efforts to run testing sites around the state, and now we've seen the Guard collect over a million specimens over these last 11 months or so. What have you learned about fine-tuning these operations?
Really, it is the adaptability that's important for us, and that's a skill set that the Guard does bring to the table. There's been a lot of sites that I had planned and coordinated, and when you get on site, there's just small nuances that require you to address and adjust what your operational plan is. We have the force structure internally for us to do that fairly rapidly. And I think those same skill sets are applicable to the mobile vaccination teams as well.
What happens if you have a surge of people who are coming to a COVID testing site and you know that you don't want people to congregate, and yet you want to get people through for testing? How do you manage those challenges?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the best things to do is to just identify where the log jams kind of are, where the bottlenecks are, and then refine that process. Perhaps you have to scale up your registration personnel. Well, we can do that. We can do that by pulling our National Guard personnel from other positions inside the site. Additionally, we do a lot of social distancing providing social distancing input. We do a lot of setup where we are identifying the 6-foot distance markings that we've all become accustomed to on the ground. And it's just adapting what the process is.
On average, how long does it take to train up your National Guard, the soldiers, the airmen, in order to carry out one of these roles in the ongoing COVID pandemic?
It takes about 1 to 2 days, 2 days being ideal. One of the benefits of utilizing this universal pod setup and understanding that we're taking public health's lead on this is that we can focus on just the job skills that are needed. We don't have to go too much into the details on things. And then we allow the service members to recognize and understand that it's the relationship with public health that is going to enable them to be successful on ground.
And when you say pod, this is the point of distribution. So you're looking at sign-up tables and curtains for privacy and other factors.
Correct. Yeah, we try to respect as much privacy as possible, understanding that it's a large scale mass vaccination clinic and that we're under pandemic guidelines. But there are definitely privacy screens. We make every effort to ensure that the customer's privacy is respected.
Well, let's take a call now. Roger is with us from Barron this morning. Hi, Roger.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that the vaccine rollout for the mobile units is a great idea, but we should also use the what we've tried and true method of using the American Pharmaceutical Association with both like Walgreens and private owned pharmacies. But during this time, we should also run surveys in exactly what the public needs for recovery. And that would be very great for instituting President Biden's plan.
Roger, thank you for calling in. Captain Eichen, what do your partnerships look like through the Guard? Of course, you're working with local health departments, but in terms of getting these vaccines into people, what other partnerships are necessary?
Well, like I said earlier on, we do have a partnership with UW to provide the vaccinators, which has been huge. I know that there are other health departments that don't utilize the Guard's mobile vaccination teams that do reach out into the communities and find nursing students, pharmacy students as well, that are able to help and assist them with the vaccination process and provides good experience.
Captain Eichen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Wisconsin National Guard Captain David Eichen is a team officer for the state's mobile coronavirus vaccination clinics. He's also a physician's assistant in Sheboygan. Coming up, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin is on the line to discuss the $1.9 trillion COVID relief proposal under debate in Congress. What questions do you have for the senator from Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Senator Baldwin here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We have Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin on the line now. President Biden has been gathering with senators to push through his $1.9 trillion COVID relief plan. A group of Senate Republicans are pushing for a smaller, roughly $600 billion counterproposal. How do you feel about Biden's plan to revive the economy? Do you support another round of stimulus checks or a more targeted approach? It's 800-642-1234. Senator Baldwin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, your party controls the Senate with the vice president's tie-breaking vote. Why does it matter if only Democratic senators muscle through Biden's plan? Will a go-it-alone approach, a partisan path, hurt your party?
Well, actually, this is going to be a process because we're using budget reconciliation where everybody has input. Once we pass the budget resolution, sort of initiating the reconciliation process, either later tonight or early tomorrow morning, because it's a long process, the legislation will then go to the committees. And every committee in the Senate is now a 50-50 committee, where Republicans and Democrats will really have to work together in order to produce the legislation that is called the American Rescue Plan that President Biden introduced. So there will be a lot of bipartisan input, whether or not the final result has bipartisan votes.
Senator, why do you support this bill, this American Rescue Package?
Well, you know, we have not beaten this pandemic, and people are really struggling in Wisconsin and throughout the country. There is really no risk in taking bold action to finally beat the pandemic and get our economy back on its feet. But there is a real risk to our nation if we do too little. Look back a decade to the Great Recession, and many economists look back and say it was too little, too late, and led to a very sluggish, decade-long recovery. We need to really focus on beating this pandemic and helping people who are struggling in this pandemic economy.
Part of this plan, a number of proposals in it, one includes this $1,400 stimulus checks. Income thresholds are being debated. What do you support for income thresholds to receive the $1,400 stimulus payments?
Well, I would use the same income thresholds that have been used in the two previous rounds of direct stimulus, pretty much for simplicity purposes, and because I think that is targeted. So those who really don't need the direct payments would not be getting them. That said, I think that's one of the areas of negotiation. And while I think that the figure needs to stay at $1,400 so that combined with last year's action, it's a total of $2,000. I do think that if we can gain more solid bipartisan support for the rescue package, that targeting a little further should be an area of negotiation.
Of course, states are wondering what's in it for them, including Wisconsin. What aid is your priority to get to Wisconsin? You know, the state and the local aid is a negotiation point.
Well, what I would say is under Republican control and a Republican administration, they walked away from any aid to state and local governments since March of last year. And yet I know from the many conversations I've had with local leaders and folks at the state level, the governor among others, that in order to really beat this pandemic and do all sorts of additional things that one wouldn't have to do in a non-pandemic time, that there does need to be direct aid to states and localities, whether that's associated with the vaccination programs or continued surveillance testing and many other efforts. We have localities that are in desperate need of additional support, or they're going to be facing these horrible choices like laying off frontline workers who provide necessary services in their communities.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin about economic relief plans on the table and the pandemic going forward. Join in with your questions for the senator, 800-642-1234. Cindy is with us from Appleton. Hi, Cindy. Go ahead.
Good morning, Senator Baldwin. I just want to say I agree with everything you've said. But I don't understand why this can't get done. I mean, when it comes to giving money to big corporations, you legislators have no problems getting that done. But when it comes to helping the states and the people and getting this pandemic under control, it's like you're fighting over crumbs. Just get it done. You've got the majority to do it. Do it.
So can this plan get to Biden's desk by mid-March?
I believe it will, and I believe that the new majority is very aware that much of the many of the programs that have been enacted in response to the pandemic prior to this expire in mid-March, but we will not have beaten the pandemic by mid-March. And so, yes, the fact that the first actions on this bill are being taken this week, and we'll probably be quite prepared to pass final legislation by late February or first week in March, I think that we will see rapid action, especially in comparison to what we were seeing with months of delay in the last Congress.
You're proposing legislation that would set aside $10 billion to expand the domestic manufacturing of pandemic supplies. How exactly would the money be spent?
Well, one of the things that we've experienced during this pandemic for almost a year is critical shortages in things that we need in order to fight the pandemic. Think of the early days when frontline healthcare workers were being asked to wear their N95 masks for a week or more rather than rather than what's recommended, which is one mask per patient. We were putting people in situations where they didn't have the tools and protective equipment needed to do their job safely. And part of the reason is with a global pandemic and not having any domestic supply of masks or little domestic supply, we were in this situation where the whole world was bidding against each other and we had supply chain chaos. I urged the previous administration to unlock the full potential of the Defense Production Act, which would have allowed us to start domestic manufacture of the things we knew we would need in this pandemic. The previous administration never fully unlocked the Defense Production Act. Joe Biden, in his first days in office, signed an executive order unleashing its full potential. And our bill provides the resources for the federal government to do just that.
Before we have to let you go, most Senate Republicans voted against holding an impeachment trial for former President Trump. It's raising doubt that enough senators could vote for conviction. What do you hope to gain from President Trump's impeachment trial?
Well, I think one of the key things, given that the former President Trump incited a violent insurrection against the Capitol, the Congress, and our democracy, is to get the facts out to the public. You know, there are still too many who have embraced baseless conspiracy theories, and we need to have a trial to show that the election was fair, transparent. Biden indeed won. He won in Wisconsin and won the 306 electoral votes that were tallied on that state poll night of January 6th.
Senator Baldwin, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Senator Tammy Baldwin, Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.